Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to singer-songwriter Jeff Black. He's on the road this fall, touring in support of his latest album, B-Sides and Confessions, Part 2. Stick around. As the doctor said, you might live forever, but you're going to die a little before you do. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience looking for a good story put to music to get their day off to a good start in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Now, the really good news is that Jeff Black is joining me today to talk music and, even better, as I said, to play a couple of songs for us. And if you like what you see and you hear, you can catch an evening with Jeff Black on tour this fall in places like Louisville, Kentucky, Valdosta, Georgia, Gainesville, Florida, go Gators, and right here in St. Petersburg, Florida, on Sunday, September 15th at the Palladium. Jeff Black, welcome to Mr. Media.
All right. Hello, Bob.
Hey.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Glad to have you. Always glad to be introduced to some new music that I had not heard before and that I enjoy. So I got to ask you, what's a good word from the road? I mean, how's it going out there?
It's a wonderful exchange. It is certainly something that has changed a lot since the internet jumped in. It is also something that has stayed very much the same, which is I think a beautiful thing for people like me who really love to perform live and to go out and, like I say, that exchange. You go out and it's the contingency of people that want to come and see a live show and practice their suspended belief is it's inspiring, and they're still coming out. So it's a great thing.
What is it that's different about it? I mean, you mentioned that a lot's the same and a lot's different. What's different about the road today?
I think that a lot of it is created by our social media and our contacts and being able to let people know about the shows. And I think the difference is that aside from old school word of mouth, I think that there are a lot of new faces, and people are taking a bigger chance than they may have in the past. Just by word of mouth, they can go online to shows like yours, and also artist websites and that sort of thing. I see a lot of people come to shows that I probably wouldn't have seen 10 years ago.
I can see that. As an old world rock critic going back to the 80s, God help me, it used to be that you only heard new music either you'd be in a record store and there would be somebody who worked there who would play stuff that they liked and you'd be introduced, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe a friend would give you a mixtape on a cassette and you'd listen to that and you'd go, oh, who's this? Who's that? Or you'd hear something on the radio, but that was only if you listened to a format that played new music. Now, I get, like, in what I do, and I'm sure it happens to people who are not necessarily in media, but, someone will send you a link to a band site or a music site and say, hey, you got to check this out. So I would think
right.
that that's...
Yeah. The word of mouth is still very, very strong, and I certainly don't want to begrudge anybody a chance to tell somebody about my music that may not have known about it. But it is really nice to be able to go because, I'll just speak for myself, somebody who is, I spent a lot of time in the 80s as well. But, when somebody says somebody's name, it is really, it's a wonderful convenience to be able to jump online and go see them. There's some YouTube videos of performances that I would prefer that weren't even there. But, you know, I think the older you get, the less I really care about the pomp and circumstance around all of it. And I try to concentrate on why I even do this now, you know. And I think that it's all right there. And I think that people that seek out intentional music that a lot of singer-songwriters try to contribute, I think that they don't really need the magic dust on it like what that was so necessary. And that's still necessary for a lot of quote-unquote artists. So I don't know. I feel right at home both places.
Mm. I imagine it's also I know when I go out to see someone live, I like to see they can actually play their instrument. I like to see that their voice is as strong in life as it is on record, because, you know, with technology, yeah, I mean, it's not always that way.
Well, it was, you know, I started playing without even thinking about it. And I always knew that it was important to be able to play and sing. I had some great music teachers. I got some great response when I was a child, and at a time when the arts in schools were just part of the daily. That's what you did. It wasn't like they weren't valued or measured by whether or not people could afford it. It was important, just as important like as recess is. So it's like or mathematics or science. So it was just part of the day. And learning how to play. I come from a very humble legacy of musicians in my family. My great granddad played a little guitar. My grandmother played piano in church, and my dad played a little tenor banjo when he was a kid. And my uncle Lyle played guitar. So, although I was never witness to any of that, I was certainly exposed to it through stories my dad would tell. And I was a generation removed from being able to see any of it. So. It was important for me to. I felt like I was carrying on this mysterious legacy, if I dare use the word. And I always thought it was important to try to stay in tune as you could. I had a music teacher in sixth grade say, "You have a fine singing voice," and I latched onto that as soon as I could. You know, I was like, "Oh, here's something I can do." You know, so I'm gonna do this, and I just put my blinders on and kept going. So being able to play and sing like I say, it comes in handy. Mm.
And how do you feel going back out on the road? And I know you've done it before. Is it, you know, do you kind of dread it? Do you embrace it? Do you, you know, is it, you know, you got to leave home, you got to do this, you got to do that. You never know from one hotel, motel to the next, you know, what's facing you. Well, you know, why do that part of it?
I love to go. I hate to be gone. My dad was a truck driver. My great-granddad was a juryman. So there's some traveling blood in my bones. Anyway, a lot of truck drivers in my family. You know, I came from a place where a lot of folks that came before me, they grew up, lost the farm during the Depression. Went and saved the world, World War II, and then everybody came home. They moved to town. There was a lot of traveling. In my history before, you know, I came around, so that part of it seems to come pretty easy. I don't like to be gone. My kids are a little older now. They're a little more self-sufficient, which is a great thing. It's also heartbreaking. And I like to go out and play because I know that as much, and this brings us back around to the whole conversation about the internet, is that, you know, the more the internet brings music to people and brings catalogs of music to people for a monthly fee, or I won't get into my dislike or white hot intense hatred for some of those. Subscription services. But at the same time, the live performance thing will never change. You know, as much as it makes it easier for people to get music, that music is not real. Even, you know, some of the best recorded music, that's the real experience of hearing people play. And part of that exchange, the vibration in the room, is important. And when people go back and they rediscover that, I think you'll find very few people that would disagree with me. I think it's great to be able to have your headphones and run around the block or mow the yard or whatever, you know, driving back and forth, taking the kids to school, you know, flipping on the radio. And if you're lucky, they'll drop a nice song on you or something that you really want to hear. But the great thing about that is that it will always just be a business card or a calling card or a reminder of what's real, you know? And the real deal is a bunch of us out there burning up the highway, you know, and we're coming to your town. We're coming to see you. So, you know, not just me, but, you know, hopefully folks that are checking out your show are certainly in that contingency of people that are they're seeking out a specific kind of music, and no matter what kind they really like, and they'll go and they'll buy the tickets, because the money you pay to get in the door, you buy the CDs, that keeps us going. You know, it's not Pandora or Spotify or any of those others. That's not the case. I won't even get into the numbers of those. So we have to come out and play to make a living.
You know, as you were talking about that, I was suddenly taken back. I remember the first live show I ever saw. It was actually George Benson, guitarist George Benson. He was touring on the Breezin' album. It was probably 76, 77. And I remember, now there's two sides to this. I remember seeing him going, okay, why am I here? There's a man standing in the middle of the stage, and he's just doing this, and he's just playing. And he plays great. I love his music, but I thought, there's no show in this part of show business. And yet, I mean, he was a brilliant player. I didn't have the appreciation for guitar play then that I hope that I do now. But I do remember, I always remember that show, and it made a big impression on me, that, you know, how cool he was, and they played. And anyway, here's what I want to know, now that I've made that little side trip. You go on the road. You've got this new album, B-Sides and Confessions, Volume 2, I'm quick to add. What have you learned about playing songs from this album when you're out there? What songs have been successful for you that maybe you didn't expect, and what songs have not gone over, if any, as well as you thought that they would, judging by the audiences?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that every record you make, and I'm still going to, I'll probably always call them records. I think that there's always a few that you will gravitate to play live. And I think they just lend themselves to that connection. And I think that there's some that are little surprises. And I think that sometimes they are their own little entities. You know, even when you're pre-production and getting ready to make a record, I think songs start to kind of let you know where they want to live. And even sometimes sequence on the record, you know, they just let you know. And if the best thing you can do is get out of the way. I think that on the new record, there's a couple that surprised me. One was a story I wanted to tell that was certainly suspended belief, but it was more of a narrative called Molly Rose. And it is it goes back to, and it's an old school love song / murder ballad that I don't write a lot of, because I usually write things that are fairly true to life, you know, because that helps me remember the lyrics. And also, it's just, it goes back to the old education I got from reading and studying, you know, Woody Guthrie music when I first started playing, about writing what you know. Other ones on some of the records, really, it's like right now, titles aren't jumping out, because it's like in front of a room of people where the energy is flowing around and that circle's coming. sometimes, like, I'll write a set list, and it's just like putting together a sequence for a record, and maybe a couple of two or three songs in, just to establish your footing, you know, and then after that, everything changes, because I think it's on any given night or any given room, any given observations you might have about an audience or the way things sound, the way things look, is going to change all of that. So I try to keep the catalog in my head as much as I can, but there's so many songs now. I used to struggle with that, and now it's the opposite problem of being able to figure out which ones to pick.
All right. Well, let's go to the part of the show where you play a song, and this is actually one that I asked for. I'll be honest. This is the one I mentioned in the opening.
Request.
Yeah. Not often that I get to request something and get it granted, and I appreciate that. This is All Right Now, and I talked to how it just kind of spoke to me. And it spoke to me in that I really like that idea of the doctor saying to the patient. It's just that it was a great moment in a lyric. Anything else you want to tell us about this song?
Well, I think it's just a short study in existentialism. I think it's a short affirmation about all right now being all right, two separate words entirely, and living in the moment as much as you possibly can. And it does kind of dice back to my old days of working as a bouncer in a blues club in Kansas City.
Very good. All right.
I'm ready.
All right, folks. Jeff Black, this is All Right Now from B-Sides and Confessions, Volume 2.
Took a trip up to Killer City, a little town where I was born. I saw what a life there might have given me. I turn around and hightail home. It's all right now. It's all right now. It's all right now. It's all right now. I took a trip to see the doctor. Gave me some strange, strange news. He said, I think you're gonna live forever, boy. You're gonna die a little bit before you do. It's all right now. It's all right now. It's all right now. It's all right now. Yeah. Help me solve a little mystery. Got it right here on the tip of my tongue. Help me solve a little mystery. Remember while we're young. Ain't no futures in the worry. Cows out walking in the corn. Every night I go to heaven, baby. Every morning I am reborn. And it's all right now. 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 It's all right now.
All right. Excellent. All right. Even better live. Thank you. That was wonderful. Now, I got to ask you, I'm watching you play, and I am no expert on this, so I will ask it in the worst possible way, but I'm looking at your right hand on the body of the guitar, and you're playing with all your fingers. I mean, you're not using a pick. All the fingers are going up and down. Tell me about that. How did that develop?
Well, it depends on what kind of song you're playing.
Okay.
I certainly always have pick candy, and I think that it just depends on what kind of sound you're trying to pull out of the guitar. I think that if you're playing the blues, for the most part, and if you're going to go down to the old town of the blues, that you probably don't want to be using a pick. I was sitting in a house, and of course he would never remember this. As a matter of fact, he probably immediately dismissed it, but this was a long, 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 long time ago, and we used to watch the sun come up after work at this little blues club called Blaney's, but we all went over to this party after Luther Guitar Junior Johnson was in town, and everybody was sitting around this room, and everybody was having a real good time, and I was sitting next to him playing the guitar, and I had my pick, and he told me to put that pick away. Put that pick away. You don't use a pick when you're playing the blues. And ever since then, I try to remember that, especially if I'm playing something along the line of the country blues. I think that being able to make it, it's a little warmer, it's a little more real, and I think that between the vibration of what's going on in your mind and your body and your hands, and by the time that circles down and goes into the strings and you're bouncing off the inside of this guitar, by the time it goes down here, I think you want to try to carry it, you know, without the plastic if you can.
Well, I'm looking forward to showing this particular segment to my daughter, the guitar player, and showing her that technique. That'll be interesting, I think, to show. So tell me about the guitar itself, because you hold it close to you like a family member.
Oh, I do. This guitar is very special. This was dubbed by my wife, Black Beauty. And this is a 1951 J45 that I bought from a snake farmer.
Okay.
It's true. And the inlay work, if you can see it on the top there, was done by Randy Wood, who has a shop out of Savannah, Georgia. Now, Randy makes beautiful instruments, and he worked with George Groom here in Nashville. And I, when I got this guitar, it was in pretty rough shape. Somebody had sort of had their way with her. And so with a friend of mine down at Groom's, we brought her back. I had tried to not buy this guitar. And the guy called me back and wrote me an email back, said, hey, I'm going to be in your neighborhood. And it's very rare I'd ever pass up an opportunity to just drive down the street and look at a 50s Gibson guitar, because I'm a big fan. And so I drove down the street. I naturally took my checkbook with me just in case. And I strummed this guitar. It was sitting on the back of the tailgate of this guy's truck. Well, when I pulled up, he got out of the truck. He's big, looked like he might have been a little grumpy. And he was all tatted up. And then in the back of the big truck, there was a few kids back there, and it looked like there was a girl about 10 or 12 years old holding a python snake. And he come around the corner of the truck and he said, put that snake away. Not everybody likes snakes. We got to the back of the truck. We looked at this guitar. I strummed it. I was like, oh, I should have never touched it, because I knew it was coming home and with us. And in the course of buying this guitar, I asked, so what do you do for a living? He said, I raise reptiles. And I thought he was kind of joking around about his kids.
I see. That's what I thought. That's where I thought that was going. Yeah.
And turns out, he goes, no, I'm a snake farmer. And so he had aquariums in the back of the truck full of some snakes and some, I guess he was delivering lizards. And
oh my God.
And with this guitar out of the parking lot down the road here, it came home. And I knew that when I played it, that there were still a lot of songs in here. And then it had been sitting around for a while. So we became very close.
I see that. How long ago was that?
Oh, this has been a couple of years at least. Two, 3 years ago.
Your previous guitar jealous?
Oh, no. No, they all get equal billing.
Okay.
They all get equal billing. And some of them get played a little bit more than others. But I've got an old J200 that I usually travel with. and on the road and play, and just a couple little here that, you know, it's like over the years, when I was younger, I had a guitar that my dad had bought me when I was 18. It was an old Yamaha jumbo acoustic, and I just had almost beat that one to where you couldn't play it anymore, and I still have it. I didn't realize how much I actually loved the guitars and what they might carry with them until I got to be older. Mm. So many things you don't appreciate until you get a little older and figure all that out.
It's quite true. And so tell me about the, if we can call it this, kind of the Jeff Black sound. I mean, has it come fully formed to you? Has it evolved over the years?
Oh yeah, I'm sure it has. I think, I grew up north of Kansas City in a little town called Liberty, Missouri. And at the time, there was the local radio station, which played country music and had talk on there. And it was KBIL 1140. Have a good day. And listened to that. And also, it was 61 Country, 610 WDAF. And then 710 WHB was the top 40 station, and that was it. And for the most part around the house, it was, and then other AM stations you might be able to pick up depending on in the evening, at night, depending on where the sun was. There was a station out in New Orleans. But mostly it was country music. And so when I first started playing the guitar, I think the first song I ever dropped the needle on and tried to write the words to was Candy Kisses. Go Tell Aunt Rhodie, the old folk song, you know, and those sort of things. And then as I got a little older, my brother brought home a bunch of records from Okinawa. He was in the service. And he brought home his records. They were all imports if you were in Okinawa. And it was Guy Clark and Jerry Jeff Walker and all those things. So, you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be Guy Clark, and I wanted to be Jerry Jeff Walker and all those guys. And so I found out that that being that, and also even some of that lifestyle, was could wear on you pretty fast. And then coming up, Bernie Taupin's lyrics and listening to Elton John's music, all down the line, Neil Diamond and Tom Waits and Johnny Cash and all those people. I think that you come up wanting to emulate the people that you admire, and after a little while, it seems like a spirit or somebody comes up and taps you on the shoulder that reminds you that you really don't sound anything like but you're trying in your mind, you are, you know. It's like when you're a kid with a hairbrush in front of the mirror or something, you know, or you're standing there with a tennis racket or whatever your air guitar of choice is. And you think, it's just like so many things, you know, be careful what you wish for. You think you're doing one thing, but you're actually doing another. And then pretty soon, as you get older and you start, the self-actualization process starts becoming more and more real as the years go by, and you're getting more memories than experiences and those sort of things. I think that it starts becoming apparent that you really weren't being any of those people to begin with. You're always being yourself. Mm. And you're just kind of hiding behind the idea of that, you know, like even playing covers. And when I first started to try to play in bars and at parties and stuff like that, you know, all the covers were obscure. They were, you know, for lack of a better term, they were B-sides and stuff. You know, like all the songs that were deep into the records, you know, not a lot of what used to be, you know, the standard 100 songs that an acoustic guitarist would, you know, learn to play. You know, I learned Kentucky Woman and stuff, but I learned Tom Waits, you know, Down in the Hole. I learned all the, you know, Johnny Cash songs and a bunch of old Springsteen and Woody Guthrie. And and a lot of those things that, you know, I guess it was, I was taking classes, especially on the old Woody Guthrie stuff. And not only just taking classes about songwriting, but starting to feel that comfort in the sort of things that you want to write about, which is the things you know. And then finding that comfortable place where you are, you can, you feel like you have experienced and maybe written enough to where you can start being somewhat of a screenwriter or someone who is, you know, hosting a narrative about something that may have happened to someone else, you know, so you can explore lives and walk in other people's shoes that way. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it did either, but it was a great answer.
Oh, good. Good.
I like that. I like that a lot. And I would think, too, that being a guy who plays out a lot, being able to drop in a B-side, a familiar but unfamiliar B-side, something that doesn't get played out or trotted out very often, or just to have that knowledge. I mean, and, you know, it's funny. I was trying to decide if I was going to mention this or not. When I listen to B-Sides and Confessions, Volume 2, somehow in my head, I kept thinking of Harry Chapin. And I know there's no good reason for that on the face of it, but I kept hearing Harry Chapin for some reason.
I bet people reference that in interviews and articles and stuff, and Randy Newman and all this stuff. Really flattered and honored by that. It's some of the best compliments you can get, you know. And I think the industry somewhat has, they are to, whether you want to praise or blame them for that, you know, there has to be categories because of commerce, and so you have to be categorized at least from one side or another. And I think that that's all right, you know. It's like a folk singer, Americana artist, I don't know, I used to go look for the new Jerry Jeff Walker records in the rock section at the music store, you know, because he was not Conway Twitty. And it was, you know, all that stuff was Americana before most of the folks running all that were even born. And so it was nice to be able to have that memory. It's like going to my grandma's when I was a kid and she didn't have running water. You know, she had a pump in the kitchen. And I feel really blessed that I was able to kind of slide in at the end of some of that and be able to experience some of it. And it's not just a story to me, you know? And to see all that stuff where it was just the bare bulbs from when they first put electricity in some of those houses. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, my experience in the music business. I think that probably keeps me from going completely insane. I don't know. It's hard to say what somebody that's 18 or 20 years old now, what they're going to be able to say about it when they're 50.
Never know. Never know. Well, let me, I'm just looking at the time, and I want to make sure we get in our second song. This is, you're going to do Ride or Coming, and I wonder if there's any story to this, anything you want folks to know before you play it.
Well, it's my it's probably my Irish disposition that I'm always drawn to songs in a minor key. But it is not to be confused with a song that's full of angst or sadness. It's more about, it is a stern and very, I think, real world claim to not settle. And I think that it's, that's just how it came about. You know, it's like when you write a song, you start at the beginning and you just try to follow it where it's supposed to be taking you.
All right.
Sometimes that works.
Folks, he's picking up his pick. Jeff Black doing Ride or Coming off of B-Sides and Confessions, Volume.
Now this is, nay, Bob, this is an exclusive.
An exclusive?
This is a new song that I wrote a little while back.
Is this not off the album? Wait a minute.
This is not on the album.
Oh my God! I just assumed. I didn't even look when I got. No. Oh, even better.
Here we go. This is this is called Ride or Coming. Candlelight is riddle dancing.
wind is blowing hard as hell. Sheets are raining, lightning flashing. Ain't no worry, faith, be well. Love will never leave you lonely. It'll be there till bitter end. Time and money won't make you happy. That's the seal of those letters you send. Rider coming down a long dark road, all packed up and turning proud to get home. Save yourself, save yourself, save your soul. Never be satisfied. Waters over Old King's Highway, rivers crested out her banks again. This ain't no night for weary traveler. Mission bell, I can hear it ringing. Rider coming down a long dark road, all backed up and journey proud to get home. Say your prayers, save yourself, save your soul, and never be satisfied. Never be satisfied.
All right. Very nice. Wow.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
Something that has not been played out before. Not been shared on the internet before.
Yeah, no, not too much, really. I've played it at some live shows.
Very nice. Very nice. And I got to ask you, so as you started that, am I wrong? I thought I saw in your face a little bit of Tom Waits there when you went, you know, looked, that pain looked at the beginning.
Any physical attributes I can't really blame on anybody else. I think I think that probably was coming long before I tried to.
Okay. All right. Well, it reminded me, I saw Tom Waits in your face there for a minute. So let me ask you this before we wrap up. When you're composing, what comes first, music or lyrics?
Ah, the old question.
The old question. It's as old as time itself.
You know, I think every song is kind of different. You know, I think a songwriter, I think I'll walk around and thinking of ideas and that sort of thing. I think that I do sit around and I'll work on progressions or play a little on piano and see if something comes up. I'd say more often than not, the idea comes along with the music. I think the tone is probably set with that. And then you try to get out of the way and jump in and write lyrics. And then very rarely, if you're really lucky, you can write the song on a first or second pass. But it always takes a little more writing than folks like to let on. You know, I think that it's important for me to every little bit have the right thing to say, you know, and then it takes you someplace, you know, and I think that goes back to the traveling part. I like a song that will take you someplace at the end and not necessarily just, you know, beat the same old idea, hit you in the head with it over and over as you go along. I think that it's, I think the tone and the music probably starts coming. And then, like the fellow said, you got to write, and then you got to rewrite.
It is work, folks. It actually is work.
I started doing this because I thought it would be an easy job.
Yeah, that's why I started doing this, too. Funny how that works out. Yeah. Well, folks, listen up. You can find Jeff Black's new album, B-Sides and Confessions, Volume 2, everybody say it at once, at great online retailers pretty much across the internet, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you look right below the video, if you're watching the video, right below us, there should be a copy of the album, probably right over there, and you can just click on that. It'll take you to Amazon. You can buy it. You can also go to his website, which I believe is jeffblack.com. Oh, what are we holding up?
Oh, this is a little sticker for the Blacklist.
Oh, okay.
Which is our great little community that everyone's involved in helping to make the records. And it's we don't advocate any third-party crowdsourcing. We're not building up another corporation to do it. This is everything goes towards manufacturing and recording of the record, and you get your name in the credits and all. There's all kinds of levels of participation, and it's a small and wonderful little bunch of folks. So if you want to look into that, where it's available on the website too. So,
and also on the website, you do a lot with the community of Jeff Black fans.
Yeah, you try to keep in touch. It's like it goes back to what we talked to before. You know, it's like there's only so much I think of the, you know, it's a merging of the digital and the analog. You know, and I think that the world's a busy place, and some folks live in the UK, and if I'm not coming over there in the next 2 or 3 weeks, they come and see me. And some folks may be in Seattle, Washington, or out along the West Coast, which I don't get out there as often. And it's a great way to connect. You know, I think it's a popular thing to do anyway. And I think that when people can do that, it's like I say, it's that contingency of folks that seek it out. And they realize that, hey, a little higher price, pre-order a CD, have my name in the credits. It's pretty cool, and it's a pretty good bunch to be in.
Yeah, it's nice to be involved with your fans that way. And
you know, I owe them a lot, and so we try to keep it on an even keel.
All right. And I'll remind folks that Jeff is on tour this fall. As we're recording this, he's got upcoming dates in Louisville, Kentucky, Valdosta, Georgia, Gainesville, Florida, and of course right here in Mr. Media's town where we record this several times a week, St. Petersburg, Florida, at the Palladium, Sunday, September 15th. That's a freebie for my friends at the Palladium. Okay. So, Jeff, it was delightful to have you. Great music. Thank you so much for playing live. And thank you for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Hey, thanks for everything you do and sharing everybody's music, not just mine, but appreciate that so much.
You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening.
the mainstream media. This is Amy Rose, and you're tuning in to mainstream media. Don't bring out the diary, we'll change your tune. It's the coolest guy since.
I don't have an ending for that.
Yesterday afternoon.
Yesterday afternoon.